Our epistle lesson for today comes from the first three verses of the 13th chapter of the letter to the Hebrews. Let mutual love continue. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing that, some have entertained angels without knowing it. Remember those who are in prison, as though you were in prison with them, those who are being tortured, as though you yourselves were being tortured. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God. We continue our intermittent summer movie sermon series today with a film called The Visitor. And if you haven't had a chance to see it yet, that's okay. But I do encourage you to go out and try to get a chance to watch it. It's on video. Walter Vail is a man who has forgotten how to live. I mean, he continues working. He teaches economics at a college in Connecticut. He cooks dinner for himself at night. He's trying to learn to play the piano. But there's no energy, no enthusiasm or passion, or even really much interest in anything that he does. At the beginning of each school year, he just changes the date on the syllabus and teaches the same course. He tells people he has a lighter course load so that he can work on his next book, but he never actually writes anything. He has had 5 piano teachers, and he still cannot play the piece that he practices daily. He is sleepwalking through his life. As the film opens, we see the latest piano teacher attempting to help Walter make some progress, but her methods are better suited to small children than grown men, and when they say goodbye, he tells her he won't be continuing with their lessons. She says, "You're giving up?" He says, "No." And she lets him know that learning an instrument at his age is difficult, especially if you don't possess a natural gift for it. And she lets him know that if he does give it up, she would like to buy his piano. Well, we come to find out that Walter was married, that his wife was an accomplished classical pianist, and that she died some years previous. And it's clear that the grief and loneliness of that loss lay heavily upon Walter. The piano lessons that he keeps taking, they seem to be an effort to hold on to what he has lost. Maybe to keep the clock from ticking endlessly forward. But time does tick on, and one day Walter's department chair comes to his office and tells him that he has to go to a conference in New York City to present a paper that he co-authored with a colleague. Walter protests he can't go, he's got too much work. He would really rather not go. He didn't actually even write the paper, but there's no getting out of the obligation. And so he drives into the city alone. But when he enters the apartment that he has owned for more than 20 years, he is startled to find that there is a young couple living there. Their encounter is filled with panic and fear and confusion. But after a minute, the couple realizes that they are the intruders in Walter's home and not the other way around. The young man's name is Tarek. He's from Syria. And his girlfriend is Zainab, and she's from Senegal. They've been living there for a couple of months. The apartment was rented to them as part of what turns out to be a scam. Well, they immediately pack up their things and leave. They don't want any trouble. But as Walter watches them across the street from his window, it becomes clear that they don't have anywhere else to go. And so he invites them to stay at least a couple of days until they can get on their feet. And they gratefully, though hesitantly, accept the invitation. Well, over the next few days, the young couple builds a tentative friendship with Walter. They eat dinner together in the apartment. Walter accepts their invitation to go out to a jazz club where Tarek plays djembe, an African style of drum. During his lunch hour at the conference, Walter is eating his lunch in the park when he hears a driving rhythm from across the park, and he goes to investigate and finds 2 young men playing this frenzied beat on improvised drums made from upturned white plastic buckets. And he's intrigued by this sound, by this rhythm. And so the next day, he seeks out the drummers in the park and sits near them, listens while he eats. And you can see the rhythm is starting to get under his skin because he starts nodding his head and moving his shoulders a little bit in time to the music. Well, that evening, when he gets home, Walter finds Tarek's drum sitting out, and he kind of starts tapping tentatively on it. And Tarek comes in and gives him a lesson in playing the djembe. Tarek says to him, "Walter, I know you're a very smart man, but with the drum, you have to remember not to think. Thinking just screws it up." And so Tarek keeps a steady beat and encourages Walter to start trying it out, just no pressure, just trying what comes naturally, to leave behind what he knows of classical rhythms and timing. And after a few minutes, Walter's look of completely serious concentration softens into something like enjoyment of what he's doing. Well, within a day or two, Walter and Tarek have made such progress on the drum that Walter even joins in playing in a drum line at the park. And the spirit of the rhythm and the energy of the beat has people of all sizes and skin colors dancing, their whole bodies moving with the joy of the music. And as they walk together, the two men joke about playing drums together in the subway station because Tarek has heard that it's good money to play down there, and so he's always wanted to do that. But on their way back from the park that day, Tarek and Walter run into some trouble. In the subway station, there's a glitch with the swipe card that Tarek is using, and so he hands the drums to Walter and climbs through and is stopped by the police, who accuse him of jumping the turnstile. Well, Walter tries to assure them that Tarek hadn't done anything wrong, but the officers arrest Tarek and take him away. So Walter comes back to the apartment to tell a worried Zainab what has happened. "It was just a misunderstanding. They said he'd be released later tonight," he tells her. But her fear is much deeper. How could this happen? He knows better. He wouldn't do anything wrong. Walter assures her, "No, he didn't. He didn't. I'm sure it'll be okay." "No," she tells him, "it won't be okay. We are illegal. We are not citizens. And when they find out..." And she breaks down. Because of course they do find out that Tarek does not have his papers. And so Tarek is held in a very nondescript detention facility in a rundown part of Queens, and Walter goes to visit him there. Zainab cannot go and visit her boyfriend because she would be putting herself at risk of discovery by the authorities and deportation as well. Walter hires an immigration lawyer and tries to help Tarek, and he learns a little bit more about Tarek's family's past. When Tarek and his mother first came to the U.S., their request for asylum was denied. They appealed and were turned down, but Tarek never received orders to show up for deportation, or so it seems. We also learn that Tarek's father was a journalist in Syria, and he was imprisoned for 7 years for something he wrote. And by the time he was released, he was so sick that he died 2 months later. During their visit in the detention facility, Tarek asks Walter if he has been practicing the drum, if he has been back to the drum line in the park. And Tarek makes Walter show him the rhythms that he's been working on right there in the visiting room. So Zainab moves out of the apartment and goes to stay with her cousin. And meanwhile, Tarek's mother shows up at Walter's door, and she's more than a little surprised to find a 60-ish white man who claims to be sharing the apartment with her son. She hadn't heard anything about that. But she has come to New York from Michigan because she hasn't heard from Tarek in several days, and she's very worried about him. Her name is Mona, and Walter takes her in, insisting that she stay because he feels responsible for Tarek's arrest. Life in the detention facility is not easy, and Tarek's usually sunny mood starts to grow increasingly anxious because other detainees are disappearing without warning. They are being moved out of the facility with no notice of where they've been moved to. And Tarek says to Walter, "What do they think, that I'm a terrorist? There are no terrorists in here. Terrorists have money and support. This is not fair." "I know," replies Walter. And Tarek snaps, "How do you know? You're out there." "I'm sorry. I keep thinking about Zainab. I just want to live my life and play my music. What's so wrong with that?" Meanwhile, Mona, Tarek's mother, has met Zainab and she likes her. She spends time with Walter and grows fond of him as he does of her. And although he is very worried about Tarek's situation, Walter has begun to come alive through the drumming and through these new relationships. He goes back to Connecticut briefly, sells the piano to that last piano teacher, and arranges to take a leave of absence from the college so he can spend more time in New York. But there's no happy, Disneyfied ending here. There's no loophole in the legal system, no tough-as-nails judge whose heart is softened by some persuasive storytelling, as happens in some other movies. Tarek is deported, very suddenly, without warning, early one morning before Walter and Mona can get to the detention facility to see him and to say goodbye. And so Mona decides that she must go back to Syria as soon as possible for Tarek's sake. She and Walter say goodbye reluctantly because they have both found something in each other that they had never expected to find again. In the final scene of the film, Walter takes the djembe down to the subway and he sits on a bench in the subway station and he starts playing this rhythm that just gets faster and faster. And a couple of the people who are standing there waiting for their trains, they turn to look at this older white man, this college professor type, who is sitting there playing the African drum, but Walter just keeps playing without seeming to notice or care if they are listening. There's no real hero in this movie, no real villain either. Just a story of a few people who are brought together for a short time before their lives take them separate ways. And so as I watched, I found myself thinking about who is the visitor of the title in the film. Is it Mona as she comes to New York City? Is it Zainab and Tarek as in the apartment where they don't really belong? Is it all of the immigrants whose life in the U.S. has no guarantee of permanency? Is it more obviously Walter when he is a visitor in the detention facility where Tarek is being held? Walter, who comes back to his city apartment after all these years and is a visitor in his own home? Or Walter, because he is, at least at the beginning of the movie, a visitor in his own life? Of course, there's not just one right answer, but what stands out to me is how in Walter's life, the decision to extend hospitality to two strangers, immigrants, foreigners, how that decision becomes a source of rich blessing for him. The verse from Hebrews today, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for some have entertained angels without knowing it," is a reference to the story of Abraham and Sarah in Genesis. They were visited by three strangers who turned out to be angels, not the glowing cherubic figures with wings that you see on Hallmark cards, but messengers from God who were dusty from the road, who were in need of food and shelter, and yet who carried with them the gift of blessing. The good news that Sarah, who was older than anyone in this room, would bear a child. That together, Abraham and Sarah would become the ancestors of multitudes, of nations that would spread God's blessing over the earth. It's kind of an amazing story. I mean, it's certainly not what Abraham or Sarah would have expected out of this visit when they acted according to the custom of their people in offering generous hospitality to the road-weary strangers. But that's the thing about hospitality in the Bible. It starts with the assumption that it's the host who is acting benevolently, doing something nice for the guest. But the story often ends with the host's realization that the guest has given more than they received. Just look at the stories of Jesus in the homes of Zacchaeus or Mary and Martha, even in the home of Simon the leper or Simon the Pharisee, depending which gospel you're reading, where they are sitting at dinner when a woman comes in and anoints Jesus with costly perfumed ointment. Guests can bring surprising gifts. Because while Walter does what he can to help Tariq, Zainab, and Mona, in the end, he can't fix any of the problems, the challenges that they face in their lives. But what he gains from building a relationship with each of them turns his life around. He goes from sleepwalking to dancing. From a life based in the mind and a life half lived at that, a life that is isolated and lonely and full of grief, transformed to a life fully embodied, connected to others, re-energized by discovering a new rhythm, a beat that still exists within his own heart. The point is not, of course, that African rhythms are superior to Western classical music, that drums are better than piano or harp. Mona herself expresses how much she enjoys classical music as she's listening to a CD, a recording of Walter's wife playing piano. There's nothing wrong with whatever type of music stirs your soul. But there is something wrong with holding on to the past in such a way that you cannot take a step forward, or with shutting down your hopes and passions because you're afraid of the pain of grief. Because the heart of the gospel, in my understanding, is the promise that Jesus made of life abundant. Not just life that goes on forever after death, but life that is here and now, infused with the spirit of love and joy and laughter. Life in all its fullness, where pain and grief are fully felt and acknowledged in order for healing to be possible. Life centered in God's love for all people and all creation. Life that is in sync with the very heartbeat of God. Sometimes we need to be shaken out of our routines to have a new kind of experience, an encounter with a stranger, a visitor, a foreigner, a guest, to realize that there is still more possible in this life than we have imagined. May you be ready to receive the visitor who comes to your door. Amen.